I'm trying to get work samples from different departments. So if you have anything, please send it to me because then I'll know there's permission. So I want to call the meeting to order. I will take attendance. Josefina Alvarado Mena.
Here.
Thank you. Adrian Barnes.
Here.
Thank you. Mike Barr.
Here.
Thank you. Stephen Borg.
Here.
Thank you. Elise Starwish here. Jonathan Dharmapalan. Waylene Huber.
Here.
Melissa Mitrovich.
Here.
Jason Ryman.
Here.
Dwayne Walton.
Here.
Diane Woods. And Nora Cesaro Dents.
Here.
Great. So we have more than a quorum. Thank you everyone for coming tonight. Ms. Douglas, would you like to do the norms review?
Absolutely. Hi everyone. Public comment may be made on topics that relate to the school. Comments on non-agenda items happen at the beginning of the agenda. After hearing a report, members of the public may also offer comments prior to the board discussion of the agenda item. Please sign up for public comment in the chat. We want to be sure to see all the signups, so please resist posting items not related to signups, especially when we're calling for public comment. You may sign up for public comment at any time prior to the conclusion of public comment for that agenda item. You don't need to wait for a public comment to be called to sign up. And for example, you may sign up now for a future agenda item by indicating this in the chat. Public comment will be capped at 2 minutes per speaker. To be sure of hearing from a variety of people, minutes may not be transferred to other speakers. Staff will do our best to respond to chat comments throughout the meeting, but may not be able to respond to every single one. So to be sure your comments are heard, please do sign up for public comment. Please remember that we are a community of choice comprised of people who care very deeply about the school. We may have different ideas of how to achieve goals, and we may feel passionately about our points of view. This needs to be a safe space for a variety of opinions. We respect the timid voices as well as the loud ones, and we address each other in a respectful manner to model good citizenship to our students. For clarification on the recording, board members and members of the public should please state their names prior to speaking. And this meeting is being recorded and the audio will be posted on the school website. Thank you.
Thank you. Our student leadership report.
So I sent out a survey and talked to a lot of students to get information about some of the things that they wanted me to talk about at this meeting. And a few things came up multiple times. The biggest was about the schedule and about the long lunch for high school students. They felt it made the day too long and it was just kind of too much energy to keep to go back to school after 2 hours of break. They also said they would prefer that early morning Wednesday meetings be later or on a different day because it's hard to wake up for an 8:30 meeting and then not really have anything for the rest of the day. They also talked about classroom engagement and students want to participate, but they say it feels really weird over Zoom, which creates kind of a disconnect. And they feel like it's much harder to get their brains going and get engaged in a Zoom class. Another point was advisory. Students want it to be less structured and more of just a time to socialize with other students and interact with people rather than having a specific activities to do that change each week so they can just get to know each other and just talk. There was a new student meeting for new students to get acquainted with each other, but it was only new students allowed. So, and many students say it's still hard to get to know and befriend new students on the online platform. I also wanted to be clear how much the students appreciate the teachers and admin and all the effort they're putting in to give us as good of an experience as possible. The teachers are listening to the students, interpreting their wants and complaints and modifying their classes accordingly, which has been super helpful for a lot of students and made them feel a lot more supported. Thank you.
Thank you. Any public comment about this agenda item? Any board comment or discussion? I really appreciate you reaching out to the students to make sure we know what they're thinking about and feeling. And I think aside from maybe the specific schedule, I think they're feeling what so many high schoolers are feeling. It is tough. Thanks so much. Okay, public comment on non-agenda items.
Nothing so far in the chat.
All right, give it another 15 seconds. Okay, consent agenda. We have, it includes the minutes and the minutes only. Are there any changes or comments or discussion?
Move to approve.
Do we have a second?
I'll second. This is Dwayne.
Thank you. Oral vote. Josefina?
Yes.
Adrian?
Yes.
Mike?
Yes.
Steve?
Yes.
Myself, yes. Jonathan, oh. Wei-Ling?
Yes.
Melissa? All right, maybe she has left. Jason?
Melissa,
oh. Yes.
I'm sorry, okay. Yeah. I somehow muted myself.
Okay, so Melissa's yes, Jason said yes. Dwayne?
Yes.
All right, the motion carries. The minutes are approved. We now have the executive director report.
Good evening, everyone.
Hi, Lisa.
Hey, Lisa. Hello, everybody. So I just wanted to share tonight, we have four sections of the school report. I'm going to give an abbreviated report tonight because the meat of what we want to talk about is coming from Mr. Oz. This is going to be one of three evenings in a board meeting where we're talking about how we're monitoring student progress and that kind of thing. And then we'll have a finance report and an Office of Advancement report. Next. So I felt that it's always so nice, and I love to start meetings off, if I can, with celebrations to honor an accolade, send accolades to our OSA family. I'd like to also talk about some organizational structure at the school, some new initiatives, and then 100% voting and 100% giving. Next. So we had quite a few celebrations that have come up. We have an OSA former student, Zendaya, who earned an Emmy for Best Actress this past week. And she had attended OSA, so everyone was very excited. And in our new communications on social media, we sent out some messages, which was great. Our teachers are also currently writing grants. Mr. Raban earned a $65,000 grant for his production design department, bringing in some new enriching equipment. Kev Choice worked with the San Francisco Symphony on Currents, and he has stepped into the role of vice president of the San Francisco chapter of Recording Academy, which is really exciting. Michelle Jacques is a five-time governor of the Recording Academy and has joined the board of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. So we're so excited for all of these accolades that have recently come to our attention at OSA. Next. I wanted to talk a little bit about the organizational structure. So we put into place some very strategic meeting schedules, beginning with the chairs of our departments. I'm working with the arts, Mike is working with the academics, And we're really looking at painting a vision of where we want to take our program and where we currently are. We then structure these meetings so that we begin with the chairs. They then have some deeper level conversations with members of their departments. We work with all staff to bring them in to have a deeper dive on some pieces that I'm going to touch upon in a minute. And we also separate those staff meetings from our professional development, which is what we have on Wednesday. I kind of covered the professional development piece in our last board meeting, but very, very quick picture is we have three focuses in our PD. One is on our remote learning. One is on equity and access. And one is on student support, and you're going to hear a lot about student support tonight. That will be kind of the focus of what Mr. Oz will be sharing on how we work with our students and fill in the gaps and provide supports. So I just wanted to touch upon our equity a little bit, because I did this week get a chance to meet with the equity committee of the board, and I also had a lovely meeting with parents. Where we had some very in-depth conversations, and they had some really great questions that we're going to be collectively working together moving forward. In addition, we have town hall meetings in the morning. Mr. Oz leads these. These are every 3 weeks for our families and Mr. Oz, and we have staff members attending that too that speak on behalf of their departments. And we're starting a new initiative, which is called a quarterly reflection. So quarterly meaning four, we'll have four of these, and our first one is coming up very soon. And this is just a wonderful evening of hearing from all members of our community and celebrating and coming together, which we need very, very much in this age of Zoom. Next. So one of the things I wanted to share is about communication. We started kind of a refreshed newsletter. It came out last September. We'll be getting the October one shortly, but this is a great piece where you're gonna have a lot of information in one place. We're trying to streamline. Miss Romy Douglas helps produce this newsletter, and she takes all the input given to her. So when accolades are happening, we would love to hear about this. Please send them to Romy so we can celebrate and honor both our students, faculty, board, and families. We're also working on marketing and communications through social media. And in addition to that, we have a wonderful parent volunteer initiative that Romy has shared, Ms. Romy Douglas, but we now have 71 parents signed up for this. There have been 12 different committees, and this is really gaining a lot of traction, so it's very, very exciting. Can we just pause for a second? Can you go back to the previous slide? I forgot one thing that I wanted to share. When I was talking about meetings, I just wanted to share something that was very, very unique of OSA, and this doesn't happen in a lot of other schools. But just as we heard from our lovely student, and she was sharing some concerns of kids, and I'm so glad that you did that, we took 2 hours yesterday, and both Katie Zog and Mike Oz facilitated an incredible conversation around what's working, what's not working, where's the stresses, and how can we build a possibly healthier schedule that is going to service not only our wonderful students, but our staff as well. And we really engaged in some deeper level conversation where a lot of ideas were done, a fishbowl was done. And I just want to give kudos and highlight both Katie Zog and Mr. Oz for facilitating that, because they did an incredible job. And from that, we'll be able to look at data to drive some decision making to better and shift our schedule slightly. Okay, next slide. And then the next one. So one of the pieces throughout the organization is doing a lot of reflective work. I feel that that's a very important trait to have as an educator. We have WASC coming up. We were just notified recently that our WASC that was postponed a year ago is now happening May 3rd through 5th. So we're reviewing and assessing a lot of programs. We're currently evaluating over 40 academic and arts teachers. I learned, just as a new person stepping in, I learned that our arts program has not been evaluated for many, many years. So I'm working very closely with our chairs and working with them, and Mike and Katie are working with a lot of our academic and arts teachers. Two things that I wanted to bring up in this meeting in front of the board was there's been a lot of conversation about the sixth grade for next year. Because next year we do not have an audition for sixth grade, but we do for 7th through 12th. And we've had a number of conversations starting with the arts chairs and then folding into their departments and then folding into pathways so that three different streams of groupings of people to kind of have a think tank brainstorming session on what could this look like, what are some suggestions. And so we're in the midst of this process, but it's going quite well in terms of really populating a lot of ideas and suggestions from the lens of our teachers who are on the front lines. Next slide, please. The next program I wanted to talk about was Step It Up, because this was a program that was developed by the lovely Kava Mendes, who started this, I think, in 2013 or 2014. And it has been shaped a little differently over the years. And I wanted to share that, yes, we are doing this program this year. This is a wonderful recruiting, a diversity outreach and training and recruiting piece for us for sharing the lovely world of the arts with young people in underserved communities. And it's really geared to grades 5 through 8. This is a flyer that just got sent to everybody today. You can click on it and you can get to what the classes are that are all online on Zoom, the age group, what Title I Oakland schools we currently are working with, frequently asked questions. So there's 9 different art disciplines and classes. And in addition to these classes that will begin October 19th and go through January 25th on Mondays from 5 to 6, there is also some partnerships that we are developing. And we recently had a lovely conversation with Roz Nash, People's Connection, and she services over 2,000 students within the Oakland city. And her whole mission and vision aligns beautifully with OSA. So we are in the beginning stages of conversation of how we can partner with each other to reach out to some of the families that are taking to see if they are at all interested in coming to OSA and kind of bridge the Step It Up program with her organization. I do want to just share that there's a lot of work behind the scenes done by 3 really wonderful staff members. So we have Michaela Peters, and we have Kev Choice, and then we have Jordan Kearns, and all 3 of them are working behind the scenes to bring this whole program to fruition. I also know that Michaela has connections with 40 different schools where she's in touch with counselors, and Kev does a lot of work with the outreach. So there's a lot of movement that is happening with regards to this, but we do need your help. We want to bring in as many kids through this program as possible. So this was sent out via email. You can also access it on our website. And if you know of families or organizations or children that would like to attend this program, we would love for you to share this flyer with them and then have them reach out to the school. We can answer any questions that they might have. Next slide. Some new initiatives that we have begun at OSA are community partnerships. When I first came on board, I saw a very dated list where I wasn't even sure those partnerships were still around, but I strongly believe in bridging strong community partnerships. It makes a lot of sense for the school, and OSA is a gem in the heart of Oakland, to be partnering with educational institutions, with nonprofits, with businesses. And so we began with our arts chairs, and we currently have about 48 community partnerships that have been set up over the years. And I'm now working with our leadership team and our academic faculty. And as soon as I finish this list, I will share this with the board. And I think you'll be really pleased to see all the connections over the years and currently that we are making and partnering. If you know of additional partnerships that you feel would be beneficial for OSA or family members, families have a business that they would like to partner with us, we'd love to hear about it. Next slide. The next piece of information is all about Dr. Dolores Thompson. She is fantastic, and she, in her new role at the school, has put together this artist speaker series. This is a new initiative for the school. It is going to unite the entire school community together at 11 o'clock on specific Wednesdays. She has reached out and gotten nationally recognized artists throughout the country that are going to be zooming in to speak with our kids coming from all different art areas. And she really needs to speak on behalf of this. We have a wonderful quarterly reflection coming up where she's going to take the stage to kind of share out the details of this. But this is just a little sneak preview of what's to come. And we're very excited. Next slide. So a big election is coming up that we're all very, very aware of. And it's been said that we should be looking at this ballot from the bottom up rather than the top down, because on the bottom are all the local pieces that we vote for, and on the top is more the national things that we're voting for. And we have a situation happening with the OUSD school board where they have four vacancies. And these are open. And so it's very important that we share with everybody that there are seats that are open, that it's important to do the research and look at the candidates. And although I'm not at liberty to endorse anybody, I do encourage everyone to look at each candidate's platform. We do have a group of parents that have organized around this voting, and they will be speaking at our next quarterly reflection. In addition to that, we are about to launch a huge fundraising endeavor. Catherine's gonna talk about it in a moment, but I would really like to ask and be very humble in asking that we get 100% of giving with the donation to the school. This would be a request to the board, to our staff, to our parents, to our community, myself. I'm pressing that donate button on the website as well. But it's just so, so important to our school and to our survival. Next slide. So please mark your calendars. We have two huge events happening. The quarterly reflection is on October 6th at 5 to 6:30. You're going to see members of our school community, going from students to staff to admin to teachers, parents, alumni. We are bringing everyone into this because this is such a time where we're all in isolation, and I feel like we need to support one another and come together and celebrate and honor the work that we are doing. In addition, OSA Creates, which is our huge fundraiser, is coming up October 15th at 6:30. I was going to give a little last plug on that. Catherine will speak on that a little later in her presentation. Next slide. And that's the end of my report.
Okay, do we have any public comment on the executive director's report? Please put your name in the chat. Okay, any board comment or discussion?
Yeah, I would like to echo the goal of 100% board giving this year for a couple of reasons. Granted, it doesn't need to be a huge dollar amount, but it tells a good story for Catherine can use, and at least she can use when they talk to other funders and they say what percent of your board donates, and we can say 100%, that goes a long way. It can be a dollar, it can be $10, it can be $1,000, it can be $100,000, but I think we should all commit to giving what we can this year. So I'll let go of that.
I'd like to just really give kudos to the team for the communications that have been going out in this plan. And, I just think with remote learning, it's just so, so important that people have all these different ways to stay connected, and it's going really well, I would say. And I'm wondering if we can have some of these presentations put onto the website after the meetings as part of the record of the meeting.
I don't see why not. Any other board comments, questions?
Hey, Elise, this is Dwayne. I just want to just publicly just sort of acknowledge just Lisa. I mean, she has done in the short amount of time, she's really intentionally worked to get in front of a number of different groups, committees. So I just wanted to publicly, I think many of us know this, but I just wanted to really just acknowledge Lisa and to say thank you, and that's it. So thank you.
You took the words out of my mouth, Dwayne. I couldn't agree with you more. I really appreciate it, Lisa. It's so good to hear good news. So needed.
Thank you.
And there's a lot of it. Thank you.
And Lisa, I'd add to that also that, I really appreciate your efforts to bring in local artists. I think that's a very important component of what we provide to students, especially such a diverse group that's really representative of the work that's going on in Oakland, as well as your work around equity and assuring that we have a staff and student body that's representative, because we have such an amazing program. And we're already appreciative of the work that you're doing to continue and improve upon that tradition.
Thank you.
Okay, I am going to move us on then to Mr. Oz and the Learning Continuity and Attendance Plan.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I want to point out too, all those kudos to Lisa. She's done all this while only meeting like four people. I mean, in person. Imagine that situation. Like, there are key members of our team that Lisa has never seen in person.
Crazy.
It's pretty odd. So I got two things tonight. The first one is I believe you guys are voting on the learning continuity plan tonight. I didn't get feedback. There were no significant changes. So I suspect that this is probably a relatively quick agenda item, but this is the opportunity to ask any questions you may have about it.
So this is the plan that we got last time, and now we are voting on it. So it was public hearing last time.
I presented it to you last time, and then you had access to look at I presented a just kind of overview of it, and then you had access to it. This is not the official LCAP that will happen in June. This is the learning continuity plan specific to COVID.
So Mike, you want us to vote on this before you do your academic monitoring?
It makes no difference to me. I'm just going with whatever process has been established. The way I saw it was this: public comment on LCAP, and then we move on to the academic excellence.
Yeah, let's do that then. So any public comment on the LCAP, which is not the LCAP, the traditional LCAP? Quiet group today.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't have any comment, Elise, other than the title in the agenda says learning continuity and attendance plan. We should just make sure that when we do the vote, we name it exactly what it's called.
Yep,
perfect. I don't know how much that matters. I see, yeah.
Thank you. Any other board comment or discussion? Okay.
So if somebody can tell me the official name, I'll make a motion to approve that thing. Is it called the Learning Continuity Plan, Mike?
The Learning Continuity and Attendance Plan, and they are referring to it as LCAP, but a different LCAP. So okay. it is confusing and a bit ambiguous, but yeah, I believe it's the Learning Continuity and Attendance Plan.
Okay, well then it's properly labeled in the agenda, so I move to approve. Sorry, Mike, about the confusion.
Can we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, taking attendance, Josefina Alvarado Mena.
Yes.
Adrian Barnes.
Yes.
Mike Barr.
Yes.
Steve Borg.
Yes.
Elise Darwish. Yes. Waylene Huber.
Yes.
Melissa Mitrovich.
Yes.
Jason Ryman.
Yes.
Dwayne Walton.
Yes.
Motion passes. And we can move on to the academic progress monitoring. Thank you, everyone.
I'd just like to say I know a ton of work goes into that report, so thanks to you and the team, Mike.
Yeah, no problem. Let's go to the next slide, and I believe the last time I gave a presentation on this subject was in January. Obviously, a lot has changed since then. I gave you all an overview of like what we do as a school to monitor academic progress, and the takeaway I got from the questions I received from the board were that you wanted this to be more regular and for us to come back and to get a little more detail oriented in terms of a subgroup analysis and just continue this as an ongoing conversation. So I've attempted to do that for tonight. I acknowledge that many of us, myself included, have been staring at screens for 12 hours. So my goal here is like in a pretty tight 25, 30 minutes to present quite a bit of information. And if there's need for more, that I just take the guidance from the board later to let me know. There is so much to share. So this is hopefully more than surface level, but not all of it. CASP has been halted. We're unclear if we're gonna be doing the state testing this school year, but we did not have it last school year. So that's a metric that I shared with you in the past that we will not be having. It puts a lot more weight and importance on our internal benchmark testing. I have a couple of our teachers here tonight that are gonna be sharing with you people who have been put in designated roles to monitor that and support those initiatives. We also need to look at student grades. I'm gonna share some info with you tonight that is gonna reveal some truths about COVID and remote learning and things that we're struggling with and battling. And in the sake of full transparency, I want you to see how this is impacting our students somewhat disproportionately and how we're trying to combat that. Graduation rate and college acceptances. I will show stats also on college enrollment, but I find college acceptance in a time where there's economic struggle to get to school to be a better indicator in many ways of academic success because it showed that the opportunity was there and whether or not one chose to go to a four-year university is often beyond a measurement of success, of academic success. City College dual enrollment, I shared with you, I've been trying to build this program for about 3 years to get as many early college credit opportunities for our high school students as possible, even some of our middle school students. Not gonna go into detail on that tonight, but I do want you to know that we currently have two college classes being taught through our school on our campus when we're not off campus by City College instructors, supported by the City College system, but the kids get to enroll and be there on our day. And get college credit and high school credit simultaneously free of charge. Pretty amazing. We want to keep building it. And then always looking at our program of study and what courses we're offering to determine if we're doing what we need to do. So let's move forward. The internal benchmark testing is something that I've been working with department chairs to really build over the last couple of years. I want in our five academic departments for us to have internal progress monitoring metrics that we can depend on. And as years go by, we need to establish many different indicators of student success and student struggles and barriers to success and look at trends amongst subgroups and over time continue to build more and more interventions where the end goal is that as we get kids sixth, seventh grade, we have this luxury of being a middle and a high school. We can actually have these indicators very early on and hopefully have the interventions put in place before they even get to high school as the vast majority of our students have a 7-year experience with us. So I'm gonna be brief on math and language arts because those are the two people I have sharing today. Mike King is going to be sharing as math department chair. One of the challenges I presented to you last year was having enough time for our department chairs to work on this sort of progress monitoring. And we were able to give Mike that time as part of his daily responsibility and role for this school year. So 20% of his teaching time is actually dedicated to monitoring student progress, which is much needed in mathematics. And then for language arts, we've gone not with the department chair, but Ms. Bradburn, who's just been amazing at data analysis. And you guys know from working with her many times, she's monitoring the SRI. So they'll talk about that. Social science is in development. The way that makes the most sense to that department is to determine appropriate mastery components to each class and build them into the gradebook, because then they're not like creating a whole nother assessment in addition to what they are trying to teach on limited time. And so I'm working with that department. Science is very similar to that. You can read for detail, aligned with the national new science standards, new next generation science standards. And then world language is unique in how they're trying to establish stuff too, and Ms. Schleimer's doing a great job. So feel free to just kind of dig through that. And we can move on. All right, I'm gonna hand it over to Mike King. For those of you that don't know him, he is our math department chair and a wonderful man, and he is taking time out of his evening to be here. So take it, Mike. You there, Mike? Maybe on mute, I don't know.
Classic mistake. Hello, everybody, Mike King. This is my fifth year at OSA, my third year as chair of the math department. And I taught sixth grade for 3 years, and I'm teaching Algebra 1 and Algebra 2 last year and this year. The tool that we've been using recently is the Mathematics Diagnostic Testing Project. It is a free service developed by the UC system in collaboration with the Cal State system. And we've used it at OSA, as far as I know, since 2017-18 on and off. So we did not use it every year during that time. And it's, as I understand it, the original intent and purpose of this was to have some kind of independent measure of learning for board review. I think when Stacy Smith first talked to me about this, that was the purpose of it. We also use it at OSA for the placement of new incoming middle school students. And we are developing its use as a tool to inform our instruction. Go to the next slide. So the advantages of using this tool is, one, it's free. It's relatively easy for us to use. It's independent of, say, teacher judgment. It's not the teachers making claims about student learning. We have some independent measure of that. And it's designed by, you know, basically the next level that students go to. It's designed by the universities in California, public universities, and reflects like their perspective on what students need to know at each level as they move through high school. Disadvantages, it's a general test. It's not perfectly aligned with our curriculum. And it measures student growth within a year. So each test, each year, a student takes a test that measures their readiness for the following year of math. So that by the end of seventh grade, say, you take this test to see whether you're ready for eighth grade math. And ideally, at the end of seventh grade, you are. We give the test at the beginning of seventh grade and the end of seventh grade, and we can measure the growth that occurs over the year that way. But as they go on to the next year, they're taking a different test. So it's harder to see individual student growth year to year. We can move to the next one. This is a lot, and I have a very specific purpose on this. So, you know, it's not meant, this slide is grabbed from somewhere else, was not created for this. It's a couple of years old. But what I want to show you about this is how we will use the test to inform our teaching. Each test, each year's test, has different test topics that you can see along the bottom there. And each one of those topics has several questions on the test. And we get a result from the test. This particular chart is, I believe, showing the percent of students who reach the critical level in that particular topic. Now, you can see, like on the left, you know, over 80% were deemed proficient. That is, they reached the critical level in the first topic there, which is data analysis and statistics. And you go on through there and you can see different percentages with different topics. The reason some are so low is this test was given, this particular results are from the middle of the year or from some point in the year, I don't remember exactly. So some of these topics had been taught and some of them had not. You can see that very clearly. But by giving this test at the beginning of the year, we can see where students are already relatively strong and where they need more work. By giving it at the end of the year, we can see where our curriculum has succeeded on particular topics and where it has not done as well. And that might help us augment the curriculum for the following year. So those are the ways we are going to use this. You can actually dive in on the test results to see student responses to individual questions. You can see common misconceptions. So as you move into a new unit, you can know that, oh, students, for example, with, let's just say, absolute value. Students tend to change the sign inside the absolute value. That's a common misconception. So we already know before we begin teaching that, that we're going to have to address that misconception. Those are the ways we will use this test in the future to really inform our teaching. And then we want to talk about how we use this test to measure growth, which is actually most of what we've done to date, is to just be able to show growth over the year. And I want to, before I show you some charts that show the growth, I want to be clear on what you're going to be looking at. So the data that I'm going to show you shows the percentage of responses that were answered correctly. And you there's probably a tendency to look at a percent and say, oh, if you got 90% or so, you're doing really well. You know, if you got 60%, you're not doing well. But this test is not really calibrated in that way. The tests are not, the questions are not really, you're not really expected to answer all the questions correctly. In fact, you rarely, very, very rarely see a student get 100%. I think I've only seen one student who got 100% last year on one of the tests. And so, in fact, what happens is it's measuring a level of proficiency that allows you to be ready for the following year. So some of the questions are going to be quite hard, but if you can answer four or five out of seven or eight correctly, you know, by the designers of this test, you are proficient in that topic and you are ready to move on to the next year. And you can be getting about 2/3 of the questions correct, or maybe even less in some cases, it varies from test to test, and still be deemed proficient. I just want to set that expectation as you look at the charts that follow. I also want to let you know that this test baseline was given in December, not at the beginning of the year. And then, so the second test was given in May. And of course we were remote for a couple of months and in a very challenged teaching environment. So there are also some, we're really not seeing the full growth in the year. And we had a difficult last couple of months. So I just want to have that context as well. So now I can show you the first chart. And let me just orient you to what you're looking at. In the solid, I really wish I had used now the OSA color palette. I regret using blue instead of red and black next time. So we have here the baseline in the solid, right? So if we take the seventh grade readiness test, these are sixth grade students in the sixth grade class CC1. They take the seventh grade readiness test. In December, they answered about 36% or so correctly. And then in May, they grew 16 percentage points on average in the number of questions they answered correctly, and they got to 52% as a group, okay? And you can see that with each case. The eighth grade readiness test is seventh grade students. They came in answering about 50%, and they left answering close to 70% correctly. And we have the number. I'm also showing you the number of students at the bottom of the chart. The number of students, for example, in sixth grade CC1 test is low, 61 students, because some sixth grade students accelerate directly into a combined, last year into a combined sixth, seventh grade class, this year into seventh grade directly, math. So we have only 61 who took the CC1 course. And in fact, it's a little more than that, but the only people that I included in this data were those who took both the test in December and in May. So we're truly measuring the growth of students, individual students on average, rather than the group that took the test and the group that took the second test. They're not 100% overlapped. I'm ready to move on, but I want to ask, because you're going to see a lot of charts that are set up with this format, and I just want to make sure that I haven't left anybody in the dark about what this chart is. Okay, next slide then. This year, the first time that we have divided it up by ethnicity, so we got the ethnicity codes that are for each student at the school, and when we had in a certain ethnicity category fewer than 5 students, we've taken each of those categories and combined them into one category that you're gonna see called other on this one. So every other category is straight out of the codes, but when it's a combined category called other for a small number. And then I'm going to show you now for each year, and you can go ahead and advance. For example, this is CC1 students. This is the seventh grade readiness test. And now we have the data that you saw before. So the total number here is the 61 that you saw before, but broken down by category. And I think what I'd like to do is just spend about 15 or 20 seconds with each slide up so you can just absorb it yourselves without me talking to it. There are 7 of these. And then at the end, we can take comments or questions. So these are 7th graders taking the 8th grade readiness test.
I want to note on this too, Mike, that it's more on the 8th grade one, that it's only going to show some, the students in CC3 are going to be separate from the ones in Algebra 1, right? So there's going to be 2 different results, one for the students that have been accelerated and some that are...
I combine these together. So for example, this slide shows both students who were in CC2, which is the standard 7th grade class, and students who were in CC1-2, those are 6th graders who have accelerated into a combined 6th, 7th grade class, and they're, both groups are taking the 8th grade readiness test.
Okay, thank you.
And we have CC3 and then combined 2-3 students. So those are 7th and 8th graders taking the Algebra 1 readiness test.
What happened to the Chinese category?
There are actually something like 20 categories, but if there were fewer than 5 students in a single category, I combined them into other. And you can see in this case, the other category only has 1 student.
Got it.
We're now looking at Algebra 1 students. They're taking a geometry readiness test.
What is NA?
That is, means that there was no ethnicity code for that student in the school database.
Is self-identified or?
That there is a category called self. There is a category called choose not to say. And these are, I believe, these are all self-identified codes. Yes.
Okay.
These are geometry students taking the Algebra 2 readiness test.
Mike, just to clarify, the growth scores are growth within a year, or is that's not year over year, is that correct?
That's right. These are students, this is comparing their test score, this is comparing a test score in December when they took the test for the first time, to a test score in May when they took it again at the end of the year. So it's not even measuring the full year because presumably they've learned, you know, between August and December, they've probably done quite a bit of learning. Yes, but then it's all those who took both tests, the average score in December and the average score in May.
So to understand this screen, for example, correctly, African-American students, although they showed the one of the lower overall scores throughout the year actually showed more growth than any other group throughout the year. Is that correct?
That is exactly right. They improved by 19 percentage points on their average test score versus 13% for white students.
Got it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And could you speak to the Latino students in both the geometry readiness test and also this Algebra 2 readiness test?
Well, the Latino students in this geometry readiness test are, however many there were fewer than 5, and they've been combined into that group called other. When we have a very small number of data points, it is questionable whether it makes sense to look at it as a category. So we've put them together.
The students are looked at as individuals and discussed with the math department, so that they're not dismissed. Those, like on a very individual level, every student is discussed who's underperforming.
And this is the last one. This is pre-calculus students who are taking the calculus readiness test.
So this is Mike Barr, question for the other two Mikes. First off, Mike King, thanks so much for walking us through this. It was easy to follow. You explained it very well. Thank you for that. I look for a overall reaction. You guys pleased, not pleased, super concerned, super pumped? Like, where does it fall in that spectrum when you look at all this stuff in the aggregate?
Can we go back to the last two slides real quick, and I'll give you my reaction as a math teacher and as an educator in general. We saw a lot of growth for African-American students. That diminished when we got to Algebra 2, which is a barrier for graduation for many students. And then you see the category Black African-American disappear in pre-calculus, which is not due to a lack of Black or African-American students at our school, but a lack of students that are enrolling in those classes. So to me, that's one of many concerns, but a very striking. We would hope that if there's an achievement gap, the place we see it in the greatest is in sixth grade, as that's when we're taking kids from all different elementary schools, and that as a school, we're seeing that achievement gap shrink over time as we're providing the supports.
Yeah.
So to me, that's a huge area for growth for us.
I'll just add a couple of things to that. I agree with what Mike said. If we look at the pre-calc again, which is the following slide, the total number in the whole group is only 34, right? So it's much easier to have a smaller, not like to fall below the threshold of 5 for a particular category. I believe there were 2 African-Americans, so the point is still valid. But you're talking about 2 out of a much smaller number. It's 2 out of 26 versus 2 out of 120 or something, which is the numbers that you have in seventh grade, right? So you can't compare them directly. Another thing I would point out is that, I think the level of growth is pretty good, especially when you consider that it's December that we're starting at. So if you, let's go back a couple of slides. It doesn't matter which one, but maybe a bigger class. Okay, so just take geometry, African-American students here. You know, they went from 33 or so percent to up 19 percentage points. In other words, they could answer almost 50% as many questions correctly the second time as the first time. And there's also, as I said, some hidden growth, that happened at the beginning of the year. So I think we're seeing from these charts and from this data, we're seeing significant growth in our students' ability that we're measuring through. And also, I just want to say again, these are not perfectly aligned with our curriculum, right? Our curriculum is not designed to teach to these tests. These are standardized tests, and the CPM curriculum that we used is sort of a problem-solving kind of curriculum where the type of learning is not focused on this necessarily. And in particular, if you look at geometry, the test that is given for Algebra 2 readiness includes a lot of algebra. So the students who are taking geometry at OSA are pretty focused on geometry, whereas in other schools, there may be a more blended thing. And you would see expect to see less growth in this particular test because they're just not as well aligned with the curriculum. So that said, I think we're seeing good growth. And then the place that we really want to look to see how we stand as a overall is I think we look at the other charts that I showed you at the beginning, and we say how many students and which students are reaching the proficiency level on most of the topics by the end of the year, right? And if that's a good number, you feel pretty good. If that's not as good a number, you don't feel as good. And I think we want to look at how that changes over time as well to see how we're evolving as a school over time. So if we go on to the last slide, which was sort of what we're going to do next. We want to look at more views of this data so we can look at that proficiency by topics. And maybe in the next update of this type, we can present some of that kind of data, or certainly by after the end of the year. And we're going to, as I said, map these tests to our curricula to be able to use it to inform our teaching. And then we can, I think, add some longitudinal analyses over time so that we can say, well, we can't see a student so well over time, but we can see the school over time. In 2018, some percentage of our students were deemed proficient. In 2019 and 2020, 21, 22, what is the percentage of students that are being deemed proficient according to these tests? And is it growing? Are we sort of improving our outcomes over time?
Have you mapped that per each of these graphs? Is there a sort of a proficiency number associated with each one of these?
Well, the graphs that I showed you, most of the graphs that I showed you were set up the way they are to give a clear demonstration of the growth to show you know, clearly like how much our students growing over the course of the year. If we want to show proficiency, that's going back to that very first chart I showed. I don't have those from last year right now.
Okay.
Mike, can I ask a question in terms of your opinion, and you may not have data on this, and that's fine, but given that the MDDTP, as you explained it, is a measurement less of proficiency within the course as much as it is a measurement of readiness for the subsequent course. You pointed out, and I saw it as well, the great growth, and kudos to the teachers in geometry, for example, for our African-American students and other groups of students. However, in terms of, although they measured readiness as being almost flat among the different groups, we saw enrollment in the groups decline. What do you see as being the cause of that, given that readiness seems to be leveling out and that gap in terms of readiness for the subsequent course seems to be leveling off? However, enrollment in the subsequent course seems to be continuing in terms of that gap.
Right, I understand your question. Well, I have, you know, I have not looked at this over time, but we do have, but what you're observing of this data is correct, that there are, that as you move up, as Mike said, as you move up in the higher levels of math, you have fewer African-Americans as a percentage of the class. I would hesitate to speculate on it other than to say, you know, the things that come to mind are probably the same things that are coming to your mind. I mean,
Do we know, is there a gap, or, and I know you said the curriculum doesn't necessarily align. Do we know, does this data that you're showing match grade data, for example?
Okay, that's a good question. I almost brought another chart. And before let me answer that question first then. So I did for my own classes, you're talking about what the teachers are giving as grades?
Yes.
I have done that analysis for my own classes. So I looked at least one time, you know, I can't remember how many years I did it for, but at least for one of the years, I looked at I charted my grades in my classes against the MDTP results. And I found like a 85% correlation. So a good alignment. You know, if you look at the scatter plot, it's kind of moving up like that. So I felt like my grades, and that was the sixth grade that I was looking at, that were reflective of their growth in the same way that MDTP was. At least it felt fairly well aligned. And I will say, as far as the tests are concerned, some of them are more aligned with the curriculum than others. So I have taken a pretty close look at the sixth grade. The test for seventh grade readiness is quite well aligned with our sixth grade curriculum. And the types of questions may be a little different, right? So they may be asking more procedural questions here, or a breadth of types of questions, whereas the curriculum that we have, it tends to be more problem solving based. And, you know, there's other ideas behind that curriculum. But if you look at the topics, they're fairly well aligned. In Algebra 1, I took a close look because I was teaching that last year. It was fairly well aligned, the geometry readiness test, with the Algebra 1. When I got to Algebra 2, it was less well aligned. You know, Algebra 2 as the math analysis readiness test was less well aligned with the Algebra 2 curriculum. So there is variation. There is some good alignment in some cases, not in others.
But just so I can clarify, and I'm sorry to ask so many questions in a row, it sounds like a couple of things. One, the MDTP, as you mentioned, is UC Berkeley's assessment in terms of readiness for a subsequent mathematics course.
Right.
From what you've shown, it looks like increasingly we have students of color being prepared to take the subsequent course. Within those entry-level courses, from what you said, the grades seem to align with the MDTP assessment, at least if your course is representative. However, we don't have students moving on to those more advanced courses, although increasingly students are actually more well prepared for the more advanced courses possibly than they were for the entry level courses, Algebra 1 and Geometry. So my question is, do you have any ideas in terms of what's causing that gap?
I mean, I can speak to that. The next level of math is optional. So I know that's like an oversimplified answer, but there are so many things that contribute to why one is not choosing to take the next level of math. A lot of stuff that's within our control, and including the decision we can make of requiring all students to take a math class. Being an art school has made that a challenging kind of conversation because our kids do so much that when a kid has completed Algebra 2, they got through, they're not showing, you know, even if they're prepared, but they have so much they want to do their senior year. We don't put that kind of pressure on them, but it's a conversation that comes up routinely.
Absolutely. And the reason I bring that up is, as we know, Algebra 2 is the recommended level, that's the recommended minimum level that students achieve in terms of A through G readiness. And that's when we start to see the decline. So I'm just making sure that it's something that we're keeping an eye on.
Yeah, and it's a constant topic of conversation. There's no easy answers, but definitely open to suggestion. And I would hope that next time when we come back in January, now everyone understands MDTP. If you guys have questions fresh on your mind of things you'd like to see at that point with the new baseline that's been established, because we're doing the test on October 2nd, shoot those to me and Mike, and then we can incorporate them into January when we present.
I just had a question about the gender overlay, the race gender overlay. Is that something that's also being analyzed? And if not, is that something that we could see in January?
We could certainly see it. I don't know, Mike, if you've done an analysis. And OSA, as you know, is an anomaly in that close to 70% of our students are female. It still makes statistically relevant information, but something worth noting.
Yeah, I don't have that data now, but we could do that.
Huh.
I have a comment, or I mean, first of all, I think it's really great. I mean, these reports are very, very helpful to see. And, you know, and Jason brought up the topic of achievement among African-American students. And I know that's been a very focused, you know, goal of OSA to improve that. And it looks like, you know, having these reports, you know, allows you to show like, oh yeah, we're being very successful in the lower grades, and then here's where we have to sort of tailor our program. And just having that information is important, and seeing where, you know, you're being successful, and there are a lot of places where you're being, oh, am I supposed to stop talking now?
No, and I'm worried because we're not a public comment. There's still the SRI, and I'm worried about time, but this is just midstream on the presentation.
Yeah, okay, so I'll just state maybe one idea is because Latinx students and socioeconomically disadvantaged students didn't get included here, and I'm sure that's because they were such a small group. So maybe rather than combine them with others, they're also important groups and they're named in our goals around equity. And so maybe combine them across grade levels to get the numbers you need to be able to take a look at that.
I think that's a good idea. I will also, I just want to share anecdotally, because I actually made all these charts with each even if there was only one student in the category, I made all the charts that way first, and then they became quite busy. And we also were worried that maybe it's misleading in some cases, but I just would report anecdotally that the Latinx students did very well in terms of growth and standing.
Okay, so since we did kind of a mid-stop with this, I want to let Mike, if you're done with the math, I do want to do public comment on the MDTP part, so that while it's, you know, the board got to ask questions when it's fresh in their mind, so I'd like to let the public do the same. So Mike, did you have more slides to finish up?
No, that's all.
Okay, so I'll take public comment on this subsection of the MDTP. Please put your name in chat if you have a question or a comment. Okay, let's go on to SRI then. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, so Chris will be up next, and I just want to point out again, it's only surface level what we're doing here. It would take hours. So thank you for your patience. I hope you're interested in at least some of this.
All right, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Great. SRI, it stands for Scholastic Reading Inventory. It's a licensed service that's provided by Scholastic, the publishers. We've been using it at OSA since 2015. We were originally licensed under OUSD's account, but in 2018, we moved over to our own server. During that move, we lost all of our prior data, which made me extremely sad, but that's what it is. It's a criterion reference test. It measures reading comprehension and for Scholastic's purpose, it matches students to text so they can read with confidence and control. And you'll see that these are reported as scale scores, Lexile measures, and the scale goes from beginning reader, which is less than 100, to originally this said 1500, but we do see in the high school it goes up to 1700. Some of the advantages, it's easy to conduct. We do it on the computer. It can be done over the internet too. It's like the math test, it's independent and objective. It's also adaptive and individualized. So no, the students each take a different route through this test. And I'm gonna show you a little bit about that in the next slides. And in this case, we do get to see both intra and inter-year growth, meaning I can track within a year how they did, but also over the course of their time here, as long as we've got the data going back. The Lexile allows the students and the teachers to select texts that are within that individual's or a group's reading level, or to intentionally push them or even go a little bit below, just so that students are aware that, hey, you can definitely read this easily. It does provide key data to inform teachers where we can use certain teaching strategies like guided reading and leveled texts, that sort of thing. Some of the disadvantages, we have to pay for it. It specifically focuses on reading rather than writing. So as far as a direct correlation to like the CASP test, we're missing a whole component there. And even within that, it's a narrow skill focus. It's about text complexity, vocabulary, and being able to read in context. There's possibly some cultural bias with some of the passages and vocabulary terms, and we'll take a look at some of that in one of the slides. The biggest disadvantage I see is that the test can get really tedious. If you've ever seen your own child take it, you may see them getting frustrated, and that's one of the downsides to it. And because of the way the test works, it depends on a student reaching a point of failure. And what I found with the students is it's really important to encourage them, like, you're doing great. And I tell them, hey, if you're hitting the point where you don't know what's going on and you're confused, that means you're doing the test right. But I do see kids getting frustrated and tending to get discouraged during the test. So next one. So just to show you what the charts look like, these are printed out on the charts if you get one as a parent, but these are the bands of proficiency. The purple ones are the ones that we're testing. And that's the Lexile scores that are considered proficient for each grade. If you are a grade below that, it puts you in that category of basic, and two or more is below basic. Anything above grade level is considered advanced. I'm very proud of this little slide because I had to kind of build it with a bunch of images. This shows the progression of proficiency over the course of sixth grade through 12th grade. So you'll see that I put there on the pink line, like if a student is moving, consistently making progress, they'll stay right there in the middle of that proficient band. What we ultimately want them to hit is that blue line, which is the college and career readiness. It's basically an idea that Lexile will give them enough skills to read typical college and career texts. The bottom there, the green line I put was to show, hey, if you were just barely into the proficient range, that's where you would hit at each level. And that's where we're not as worried about where the kids are at. As long as they're in the green area, we're happy with that. Let's see. Yeah, go ahead to the next. So this is an example. So if you are, in this case, probably a first or a second grader taking the test, this is the kind of question you're going to get. And this is what they all look like. In fact, a pretty easy question here. If you get it right, it gives you something harder the next time. So let's try another one. And that's something harder. And another. This is, if I recall right, was the, I made these accounts, Lorenzo von Matterhorn was a, it's a fake account. This was the test question that showed up for a sixth grader And what it does is the test, the first time you take it, it gives you its best guess what your reading level is going to be. And if you get it right, it moves you up. If you get it wrong, it moves you down. And then there's one more. I just want to show you how complex it can get. This is a pretty tricky one. You can read that, figure out what word would fit in that closed statement. But you'll notice down there at the bottom, we've got some words in there. So scurvy a trick, the strange sail, the masthead, that's where, and the brig. That's where I worry with some of these passages that there may be some language in there that requires prior knowledge that not all of our students would have. So that, you know, if you know anything about sailing, you'd know that that's what that's about. But students that aren't familiar with those terms might get a little stuck on a question like this and struggle trying to find the answer. So just an example, this is on the higher end of well above college and career ready. So this is our most recent test scores. We are still waiting for 64 students to complete the fall test. However, 41 of those 64 we have prior data on. So I am concerned that we don't have any data for 23 of our students that are new to OSA, but we've got some basic data for everyone else. And you'll see a good chunk, 50%, are already at the advanced level, 28 are proficient. But it's the yellow and the red that we worry about, and those are the ones we want to look at for some form of intervention. Let me go next. I did want to compare this to last year and the year before. These are the baselines that we started with in 2019 and in 2018. So I found this interesting in that we're actually starting this year with more students in the advanced, and the yellow and the green are not a whole lot different than they were in prior years. Now, bear in mind that every year we get a whole batch of new sixth graders, plus a good chunk of new ninth graders and a smattering of other students, and we lose all of the seniors that we graduated the prior year. So it is a different group of people. This data is a little bit skewed because the way I had to pull the data, this does not include seniors from last year, and the 2018 doesn't include seniors or juniors from that time. So, and this is the growth that overall the school made last year, even with remote learning. So we started in September 2019 with a good chunk already in the proficient or advanced range, but we had 15% at basic and 6% below basic. And we did move some students out of those two bands of proficiency, and a good chunk of the proficient students moved into the advanced. So given our circumstances, I feel like that's pretty good.
Can I ask, sorry to interrupt, can a point of clarity, is that June 2020?
I'm sorry, it is absolutely June 2020, thank you. That's what happens when you're typing things up real fast. Thank you for pointing that out. Next slide. All right, so this is looking at the growth of seventh graders in particular from fall 2019 to now. So this is the from the beginning of their sixth grade year to the beginning of their seventh. So you'll see of the students that we had last year, we actually made some pretty good progress with many of them. Next. And then from eighth grade on, I've actually got 2 years worth of data. So for eighth grade, when they started in sixth grade, we had 29% in the basic category, and we've reduced that now to 17% and moved a number of students into the advanced. Next. Ninth grade, we've got this going back to seventh grade. Some real reduction in those basic and below basic categories, which is pretty fantastic. Next, same thing with 10th. A little bit of a stalling there. Some interesting data points there. You'll see there was an increase in the below basic. I do have something to show some analysis of that, which I think you'll find interesting. Next. There's our 11th grade. And this one, mostly it's that movement from basic into proficient that I'm seeing here. And then the last slide, the current 12th. Again, when they were in 10th grade, we have had a lot of students move into the advanced, but we've seen some changes in the basic and below basic, which is of concern, but I do want to show you some other slides to see some analysis of that. So next. Okay. This is some real student data. Obviously there's no name on there, but this is a real student. This I found interesting because it's kind of the perfect curve for a ideal growth of a proficient reader. And if you look on the chart there, you'll see that they started in yellow, but that's yellow if they were a seventh grader at that time. But when they took that test, they were actually a fifth grader. Mm-hmm. So when they were in fifth grade, they were on grade level. The next time they took the test, the beginning of the year, they were still on grade level, and they've just made steady progress all the way up. So this is kind of the ideal growth pattern of a proficient reader. Next. And this one, I'm real proud of this. So this shows what happens when we do interventions. So we have this student started at the beginning of the year below. One of the first things that we did was we put them into the literacy support class. And knowing who this is, I could say there was excellent parental buy-in. The student worked really hard and within one semester managed to move up their score. So we pulled them out of the literacy support. And they continued to improve their reading, and now they're reading on grade level. So this is like an ideal example of where the literacy support class can have an impact, a positive impact. And one more for this one. Next. Another interesting one. So this is a student who, when they came and tested with us in fifth grade, they were on, but after summer, because the bands had changed, they were now below. We did not do anything but regular classroom interventions, just standard stuff. And over the course of last year, as well as the summer, they had some tremendous growth. So again, ideal growth pattern. You don't see this with every case, but this is a great, great example. And again, this student worked hard and there was some good parental buy-in. So I want to show a couple of case studies where this is what the teachers are looking at. If you put all the data and you look at these charts, you really start to look at a student on an individual basis. So this is an interesting one I pulled because of factors I know. This is a student who is speaking two languages at home. They've been at the below, but not far below. So just below grade level. I am concerned at this point because they're not making progress. They seem to have flatlined a bit, and even during the over the summer have lost some ground. Usually we take the highest score, so I would say 931 is probably a more accurate number for this student, but 931 is below grade level at this point. So I am concerned. So the teacher would want to do some interventions with this student to see if we can get them reading more, maybe tackle some skills that they're... When you have a student who's speaking two languages, we often see a stalling of gains because they're grappling with different vocabulary. And it's often like they'll start low and all of a sudden when those two language systems combine, they'll make a big leap. That's pretty typical for students speaking two languages, two or more languages. Next one. This is another student who was in our lit support class, didn't make the number that we wanted them to after the first semester, so they were in for the full year, but you could see at the beginning of seventh grade, they were now on grade level. So this is a great success story that the lit support class really did help this student. And now they're still moving up. We still have them in the below range, but with a lot of positive movement. So I'm real hopeful for this one. So the teachers will be looking at this and going, how can I target this particular child's needs and keep that positive trajectory going? Next one, there we go. This one is another one, a really interesting story here. And again, when I look at this data, I'm thinking of the kid, the student. Here's a student, has been in lit support for 2 years. That first year in sixth grade really didn't make much progress, but there were significant attendance challenges. What ended up happening is they continued working in the lit support class. in seventh grade, that became like a real place for them to feel connected and feel supported. And you'll see the growth there in the Lexile. They are now reading it below, which is the progress we want to see. Obviously, we want to get them to proficient, but this is looking great. So this is another real success story for our Lit Support class. And here's an interesting one. So they were in below at the beginning of seventh. This is a student that I had in sixth. And when I saw that number, I said, that seems odd. And so I had a conversation with Ms. Guerin, and he said, I don't think this student should go into Lit Support because I think that's just an anomaly. And I thought there's a lot of organizational executive functioning challenges going on, which are typical for a seventh, eighth grade person. I think there was just some brain reorganization. And so you'll see this growth was completely no formal interventions and just a student getting older, maturing. Next. I have to remember who these students are so I can. I love this one. So this is a student who seemed to be a little bit stalled out in seventh grade. But what was going on alongside this is a really strong connection to OSA. Like, this is super spirit kid, loves the school. And you'll see, I think that's probably why this student suddenly got super motivated, and you just see that climbing. So most of this was a good relationship with teacher, good relationship with OSA, and then that real positive growth right now. So real proud of this student. Next one. So I put this one up because I think it really shows how seeing students in that below category, in the red category, as just a single blip, a single number, is a little bit misleading. You might look at that student and say, oh, they're struggling, but really the longer story is when they got to us in eighth grade, they were reading at a beginning reader level with the books that I put so you could see the kind of text this student was capable of reading, Green Eggs and Ham, and with a lot of interventions, a lot of work, they are now able to read The Little Prince. So that to me is a huge success story. If you look at it from a data perspective on those bigger charts, you might see this as a failure. And I just want to mention that because to me, this is something that we're very proud of, this kind of growth. I think I got one more case study. Yeah, this is another success story. You'd really have to know some of the details of which I can't pass on, but this student has pretty much looks like flatlined with currently moving in a positive trajectory in the last year. But what I'm seeing there is that growth from 873 to 1012, and knowing some of what else is going on, a really complicated home situation. But what has been carrying this student is an incredibly strong connection to the OSA community and to teachers. So we didn't do language arts interventions as much as student support interventions for this student. And you can see that positive growth, really feeling hopeful for this one. And I think I got some more slides that sort of show this. One more. So this is a student who is now one of the below readers in 12th grade. I don't know for sure what happened, but I have a pretty good sense this is early onset senioritis, that they just got tired of taking the test. This is an advanced reader who didn't want to take the test that day. So we are seeing a few of those in the 12th grade. You see it from here and there, and we've got some slides that'll show you some of the below basic patterns. I think that's what's coming up next. So in our ninth grade, we have six students below. The ones that are a single dot are brand new to OSA. So obviously we're gonna have to do some intervention with them, but we're just at the beginning stage. So still figuring out what to do. Two of them I'm really concerned about. Actually all three I'm concerned about. The one in the lower left, I have some concerns because they seem to not be flatlined a bit there. But then the other two, again, just like our senior on the last one, those are students that it seems like they didn't perform to their capacity on that test. I am a little bit worried about the one on the far right, because you have that flatlining before, but the one in the middle, I think we just need to motivate that student. It's as far as the reading is what I mean. I'm not worried about that student from a reading perspective. I'm worried about the connection, the motivation. Is this something to do with the remote learning? But I think their actual reading skills are solid. Let's see, the same thing with 10th. Again, we just have one student in that's new. At the top there, you see a number of students that have been flat for a while, so we probably want to do some interventions there. And it looks like three of those four at the top, there's some drops probably related to the remote learning and motivation. On the bottom, three of those on the bottom, I think, are definitely about motivation. And it looks like it hit earlier, it hit during COVID for sure, because you got the two data points there. So I'm worried about all of these students, but I think there's different reasons why they're struggling. And one more for our seniors. Just to show you, I've got the student that we saw. There's another student, the one in on the far left at the top. Similar story to the one in the middle. And then you see the one at the bottom, bottom left. That is so much about the student, whether they feel connected to the teacher. So there's interventions that can and should be done, but it's, again, not necessarily a reading intervention as it would be a connecting that student, building relationships with them. And then we've got a senior who we want to work on that's brand new to OSA. Feel free to interject with questions. I know I'm zooming through this. So SRI does have demographic information. However, the current demographic data in the SRI system is very incomplete. It's in the process of getting imported. I just wanted to put this up so you could see what categories we do have available to us through the SRI database. It's just a choice of whether we put the SRI data, put the demographic data into the SRI or put the SRI into PowerSchool. And Mike could probably address that, what the long-term plan is for that.
Yeah, I mean, David Smith's working on it now, so that hopefully our report in January, we'll be able to look at all this baseline data on demographic and then be able to monitor the progress through the two subsequent tests.
So I wouldn't stress too much about the specific numbers in here because it's incomplete. I believe when this data was put in, it was more to experiment and see what the charts looked like when you had that data in there. So I don't know how accurate this is, but it is what we would see if we had that data available. I think I've just got a couple more to go and then we're done. Our baseline proficiencies this year are here. The notable things are in grade six, we have many more in the basic zone than really percentage-wise than any other grade. So that's something that the sixth grade teachers will be looking at. I'm pretty confident with our program. It's not atypical for us to get that kind of data on the first baseline test. We usually tend to round those curves out eventually. I got a few worries about 10th grade with the number of students in that below basic. So we'll be working with those teachers. And I mean, obviously we want to move students out of below basic and basic and into the proficient zone. So we're worried about all of them, but on the whole, feeling reasonably good about this. I got one last slide. So SRI going forward, we want to get that demographic data into the SRI server or vice versa, SRI data to PowerSchool. And then the English teachers have already begun using this data to inform our instruction and how we approach our teaching. So fire away with your questions. I'm ready.
Okay, I'm going to start with public comment. Any question? We have one at least. Miss Dangerfield.
Hi, good evening, everybody. I got my question answered, but as I posted in the chat, it was answered. I then came up with another question. So my question is for the African-American students. I know that I saw them at the lowest achievement kind of proportion in the chart. Wondering what are the specific interventions set for them. I'd love to hear some things around what you all are doing about that particular group.
It's really a question more for Ms. Guerin, who's the chair of the English department. I'm sort of the data wizard, so what those interventions are. We do have the literacy support class, though. That's not specifically addressing those needs, that group's needs, but it does address students that are in that zone. I do know that we look a lot at our novels that we choose and the material that we provide to ensure engagement for all groups.
Oh, sorry, Chris. There's a big overhaul happening right now with the novels that are being used to make sure they're culturally relevant. And also, as you saw, Ms. Bradburn, like our teachers sit and talk about this data like this, like on every single student individually. So the demographics is going to be great for us reporting out to you guys, but not a single student goes by where we're not aware of where their performance level is. And the interventions really vary student by student. They're there. I mean, the way that our English department, for lack of a better word, nerds out on this data and really addresses the needs of our students on an individual level is like what Ms. Bradburn just shared, but times seven with all the teachers there.
I understand. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Presidia. I have a couple, or were there more questions on this? Because there's a couple other big picture things that I do think are important to share. I feel bad about time, but.
Mike, go ahead and share. We don't have any public comment right now. There'll be one more chance at the end for both board and public.
Okay, I'm going to be kind of brief to honor time, but not because this is not important. I just want to make sure you guys see these next few slides. This one is a comparison of the semester two GPAs by ethnicity. The top row is 2020, and the bottom row is 2019. And I share this with you to show the impact, what I believe to be COVID, on the disproportionate impact on our Black and Brown students. I'll let you draw your own conclusions, but I want to share with you what I see when I look at this, is that the Asian students performed overall generally about the same in the COVID semester of spring 2020 compared to the previous year, while African-American and Latino students saw a shift. If you look at this, it goes from zero grade point average to five, because there's a lot of kids taking weighted classes, AP and honors and college classes. But you'll see the Black, African-American, and Latino, a significant shift from some of those Bs into Cs and even into Ds. You'll see the white students, there was even a grade point average increase. Some of that, in order to fully understand, needs to be contextualized that there was an increase in the weighted classes that were offered. The dual enrollment statistics class had a big impact on this as more kids took that class. But with that, there's still a great concern here. So this is the spring. Remember, we were in Band-Aid mode, trying to do everything we could to get by through a semester. If you go to the next slide, the next two slides kind of finish the picture I'm trying to paint here. This is the pass not pass grades from last year. This is going to impact grade point average too, as students who have elected to take a passing grade, it's going to have an impact, whether positive or negative, depends on the case and the situation. But the next slide is actually the one that I wanted to show. These are the cost referrals. In the spring of last school year, Katie, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was somewhere around 205 cost referrals. That's our coordination of services team. These are the referrals from teachers and other administrators to say, hey, this kid, I'm concerned about them. 203, Katie said, that I'm worried about them and they need some attention. And I want to share this, that these kids on this are also, when we did a cross-reference here, they are also the kids who have seen the decrease in the grade point averages. So we need to improve in terms of making sure we're keeping those grade point averages up and providing the interventions, but those kids have been noticed and the supports are in place. When I present to you in January, I'm really hoping that what I get to show you is a significant, is a return to where we were in 2019, and if not better. I'm hoping that all the work we've done, the design work we did over the summer, working on a whole revision of what our program looks like, shows improvement, and we don't see that magnification of an already present achievement gap. So I just want to be really transparent and show you, and it's haunting us and frustrating us, but we're working on it. And one more slide, then we can do questions overall. important for the full picture too, is to know where we ended last year. What a crazy way to end a year, but this is what happened. The slides speak for themselves, but take a look and see where our students are going. To see out of 22 African-American students, 13 get accepted to a four-year college is notable and problematic. Same with the Latino, seeing seven, and same with the Asian students too. There's in each of those subgroups. We wanna see, I'm less concerned, as I shared earlier, with attending the four-year college, though I wanna see every single student get the opportunity to attend if they so chose to. So sorry to rush there at the end, but that is the end of or go to one more slide, next steps. Lisa told you about what we did yesterday. We're doing a really deep analysis of what we need to change for quarter two. We're hoping it's not like major changes that impact the families and the students. Schedule changes are hard to deal with. I deal with it at home for my kid and it is what can devastate a day. But we're hoping internally we're doing some things that support and reduce the achievement gap that we're seeing. We're looking forward to getting the quarter one data so we can run that analysis and see if there's been improvement this school year compared to in the spring. We're going to continue to develop these metrics that you've seen today and the science and the social science and the world language. I wanted personally just be very open with our community. I met with our POC group the other day and I want to share like all of this transparently and make sure we're just talking about this and looking at it in a very honest way. And then make sure we're finding those early indicators so we can get those interventions in place. Once again, we have the luxury of having kids in middle school. Like what an amazing asset to have when you're trying to intervene early and support kids through your high school program. And lastly, we just got to work because there is more to be done than we will ever have time to do.
What is quarter two?
Quarter two is about to begin in the second week of October. And we're looking at for remote learning, are there some shifts we can do to how we're supporting students, to how we're supporting teachers, reducing teacher office hours to streamline them so students are better able to access them. Remember, we created a program to do something that no one had ever really done before. And we did a pretty good job, but we think that there's room for refinement. And we're hoping that the refinement that we do will better support our teachers and students.
So quarter two is middle of October through the holidays.
December 17th, yeah.
And then is there any... what are the tea leaves for quarter three?
Well, we got to see where we're at. We as a school committed to remote learning through semester one, unless there was an abrupt shift. Time has proven that to have been a wise and prudent decision as we were able to really focus on what remote learning should look like. It seems like the district is doing the same. I think it's too early to speak to it. I really think it's a coin toss at this point. If we're back in some shape or form, things could go in major different directions and support. Like this that I shared with you today is very specific to COVID. Like we're in hyper mode of analysis of our students right now in a way we've never been before because we don't have access on the daily basis in the same way.
Amazing. Thanks, Mike.
I'm sorry about all that time, but I do think it's worth you guys getting a glance into what we exhaust ourselves with.
I know. Very much appreciated.
So hold on. I want to get public comment first and then we can have the board discussion. So any public comment about any of the academic presentation?
Mr. Leon Jones has submitted for public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Leon Jones, go ahead.
Hello, everybody. This is sort of a question to Mr. Oz. Hi, Mr. Oz, good to see you.
Am I allowed to answer questions? I wanna make sure I'm
yeah.
Okay, perfect. I just wanted to know if there's any support for the current seniors as of right now in terms of preparing for college. I know that for my class, we were in person and kind of got that support and like had the sessions with Ms. Snyder and everything. I was just trying to see like, how was that in the age of COVID supporting these seniors in terms of applying for college so that areas that you said you want to grow in, we can grow in as a school.
Well, one thing that I think you'll be really pleased to hear is there's actually a class in the academic portion of the day for college support to support students. It's seniors semester one to support them through the application process and juniors in semester two to support them as they're heading into their senior year. So Ms. Snyder's got that built into the day. It's not like a club where people have to come after school. They're enrolled in that as a class. Two is just in our revisions for quarter two is an intentionality behind two grade levels in particular, sixth and 12th grade. 12th grade in exactly what you described, and sixth grade because we've got 125 people who have never stepped forth in our building and are like doing their best to be OSA students. So it's part of a conversation we're having, and we're doing what we can.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leon. It's nice to see you.
Any other public comment?
I'd love to interject. I love that you, is it okay?
Yeah, Ms. Dangerfield.
Okay, thank you. I'm actually a part of H6 Valencia. I don't know if anyone's heard of it. It's a nonprofit organization with the mission to serve under-resourced youth, and I'm heading the Black Student Initiative, and I'm really specific in my target for Black students. So if anyone is interested, I can give my contact out for Black seniors to become participant in the Black seniors writer seminar that H6 and I have put together. I'm really interested in offering H6 resources to support Black seniors specifically.
Thank you, Presidia. I'd like to connect all of our Black seniors to you in giving that as an option. We have each other's contact info. Can we be in touch about that?
Yes, yes, yes.
Thank you.
Other public comment? Okay, board discussion. Go ahead, Jason.
I wanted to start off, first of all, by saying that I think Mike, you, and the rest of the faculty at OSA have been a little bit humble. For those of you who haven't seen the statewide and national data on the spring quarter and moving into now, the learning loss has been tremendous overall. And to not only not show overall learning loss, but to show growth during that period of time is a tremendous achievement for you and to the entire teaching faculty. Chris, also with what you shared in terms of the level of detail with which you're looking at individual student achievement and designing intervention for individual students and thinking about each kid, and as you said, nerding out on the data is really absolutely critical to supporting students. So I wanted to applaud you both as well as the teachers for that work. I'm also wondering, in terms of looking forward, as we're seeing students, and you've done a great job of identifying individual students who need more support, what is the plan in terms of, you know, that the state has allowed, for example, learning hubs with limited instruction in person if needed. Some districts are providing after-school tutoring. Prior to resuming in-person instruction, what are the plans in terms of intervention and additional student supports for students who need that currently?
I do want to be careful on what we commit to at this point, because as you know, it's super complex what all this looks like. But given all the circumstances and balancing everything together, as we described in our learning continuity plan, if and when we're able to have campus access to some before all, we want to make sure that it's going first to the students that are in need of extra support. And also, and even if it's a student who might be doing academically well at this point, but is facing hardship at home due to a family being an essential worker, or something else comparable, that is going to be our first level of access. The reason I want to be really careful in what we promise is the budgetary implications of a partial return to campus pose many problems. To have some on campus can cost as many as having all, if not more, because now you've got more faculty and all the cleaning services that need to be done to ensure that the campus is safe. You've seen our campus. It's not going to be the easiest location to give those kind of guarantees. So it's we know who we would like to invite back and how we would like to support. But first, we have to determine how feasible it is to do that. arts is another priority. Our kids need the reason our kids, one of the reasons our kids do so well is they're at an art school. They love what they do. Our teachers love teaching at an art school. They love what they do. If we can start having outdoor gatherings, our arts teachers are dying to do so. And I believe that that's the type of support that might not be as overt into how it's actually supporting students academically, but that connection is so important. And one of the things that I'm really concerned about if we move into a whole nother quarter of students being at home is losing that kind of connection. We're now red and not purple, as you know, in Alameda County. And so that means in 2 weeks, we might be able to start doing some partial instruction. And the first phase would be some of those outdoor gatherings for our arts classes.
Elise, this is Steve. I just wanted to comment that the assessment regimen is impressive, but even more so how conversant the presenters are, especially Ms. Bradburn, about specific cases and the intervention. And the amount of care really resonated through the presentation. So I want to thank you for that because I think that's what sets our teachers apart. So thank you.
I agree. I'm both presenters today. I'm very grateful to have you guys. And there's a reason why these two people are in these roles. Chris does this on top of her entire teaching load. So she is a full-time teacher. And then in addition to it, coordinates this test. And it's incredible what she gets done.
I love data though. I'm really, it's my nerd fun.
I have just, I guess, two things. So I would really, either as part of the equity focus groups or in another way, I would ask your students that are, this is going way back to the math, to the ones who are not taking, moving on to pre-calculus. I would see if you could have some student focus groups or just casual conversations about why. And maybe get some qualitative data about it.
I do have something I want to share. I agree, Elise, completely. However, celebrations where celebrations are due. We have two sections of pre-calculus this year. Last year it was one. We have a math department that in my 15 years at OSA, and I was a math teacher at OSA for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, has never been so stable. We're just now experiencing the first like generation of kids that had stability through 9th and 10th grade in their math classes for the most part and are starting to get up to that. So I, in addition to what you're saying, I believe that the momentum is there and it takes a few years to actually see the outcome. We had a group of kids a few years back, I think 4 years back, who in a 2 year period had 6 math teachers between their algebra, their geometry and algebra 2 experience. Of course they didn't go on to pre-calculus.
Okay. And then this is probably, I don't know if it's premature, it's a lot of work, but any plans to do a writing assessment?
Yeah, we're working on the all school write. I was working with Ms. Guerin on that. I forget, I'm losing track of days, but I think 2 days ago. So we're going to do an all school write in kind of the traditional way. We're going to make it about the arts very likely so it can become something that's relevant to all of our students. And then it'll be kind of fun. I've done this in previous schools I worked at where you calibrate a rubric with a bunch of different graders and everyone gets together. We acknowledge that SRI is one data point and that all school write would really help kind of balance that.
Great. I think it's a lot of work, but so telling. And then I only have on my to-do list in January the request for some gender analysis.
Yep.
And if it's not too small of a group by race.
Yeah, and I'm hearing two things today. I have that noted, the gender overlay, and then in addition to it, we'll share subgroups even if they are technically statistically irrelevant, and we'll just put that as the asterisks on there so we know that it's more anecdotal information, but make sure you can see that information.
I just want you to be careful about privacy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I actually would, I think it's fine how it was. I mean, the state says 9 students. I just be careful about that.
I agree. That's the worry I have.
Okay.
If people know, anyway.
Other board comments, questions, discussion?
Wei-Ling. So just to really say the same thing, that the presentation was amazing, and I echo everybody's thoughts about how detailed and student by student caring it was. Just to clarify one of the, on the math, and I would say the same thing about the language arts, is if you can't pull out by grade these other subgroups, Latinx, economically disadvantaged, students with disabilities, then combine all of middle school or all of high school as one, is just one idea on how to get the numbers you need.
Got it.
Good idea.
So you got to remember these tests, so we don't have to give the background. We jump right into the data in January, and you get to see the update from here.
That's great. Okay, I am, thank you, everyone. And I am not offended at all if any of the staff wants to sign off and get off of Zoom while we go into finance. So feel free. And we have our finance report.
Hi, everyone. It's Susan Lefkowitz.
Nice.
Hello, Susan.
Hi. Just a quick update. I know it's late, and I know we gave a longer presentation last month, but we did want to share actually some good news with you tonight. First of all, we continue to meet every single week just to keep a pulse on the finances and the budget and everything that's going on, and making sure that we are, you know, just aware and planning ahead. So on August 31st, the state legislature passed SB 820, and this was the legislation that will allow schools to apply for the additional funding if the board had approved planned growth. So it was actually signed by the governor on the 18th of September. So that means now that we will be able to apply for additional funding based on the board approved growth, you know, that we had built into the budget for 2021. So we don't have, really what will happen now is we'll wait till Census Day, which is October 7th, and we'll be able to take the enrollment on Census Day. And then they apply the statewide average attendance rate to that, and then we'll be funded either on that number or what the board approved for growth in the budget, the lesser of those two. But our preliminary estimates are that will be about $300,000 in additional revenue for OSA. So that's great news. We're very happy about that. So these payments, once it's approved, I think the application will be available in early October. The payments would actually start coming in February, but they are subject to the deferrals. So we are looking at, we've talked about it before, we're looking at deferrals all the way February through June. All of that money won't be fully recognized until November. So it's very deep deferrals this year. And we're also planning, so this additional money is subject to those deferrals. So we're taking that into account as well. So the money will come, but like I said, not all of it will come until November. So in the meantime, the PPP loan is definitely helping cover our financial obligations during this time. We're watching cash flow very closely, and we are prepared for deferrals again next year, because we just recognize that, you know, with the deep deferrals, we probably will not see that kind of state revenue, you know, all in coming back to us next year. So we're just planning really carefully. And making sure we can cover all of our operational expenses. Anything anybody wants to add? Did I miss anything? No?
Okay, thank you. Is there any public, was someone gonna say something? Okay, any public comment? All right, any board questions, comments, discussion?
Yeah, Lisa, this is Mike. Just a couple things to fill in a little bit of that. The current cash projections are worse than they were going to be before the deferrals increased. We do see a path to not being able to do external borrowing this year, but I've asked Kimberly and Susan's team to take a look at what would be the impact of deferrals being worse than currently projected. So that we can get ahead of that curve a little bit. There's a number of places we can borrow from. There's also recently released California School Finance Authority is offering a very low cost deferral borrowing program, in which you borrow money from them. You get the money when you would normally get it per the state apportionments. And then when the state does send money, they don't send it to you, they send it to CSFA. And so I would recommend taking a look at that program. Applications are due in about 3 weeks, but it's a first come, first serve basis.
Yep.
Any other board comments or questions? All All right, and related to our financial help, advancement. Catherine, thanks for staying on.
Of course, it would have been awkward if I left.
We would increase your target if you did, so.
good evening, everyone. I will keep my piece short and sweet. Just a quick update. This is self-explanatory here. We are trucking along, and we are pacing comparatively to previous years at this time of year. We are right on par with where we are at. I know that these numbers seem low, especially with the annual fund campaign. However, we just mailed out all of our first solicitations. In a normal year, we would have done that 2 to 3 weeks ago. Things are moving kind of slowly while we're in a remote environment, but we're figuring it out, and we got all of the solicitations out. So I'm very excited to for the next meeting. We'll definitely have a spike to report on. We also saw an increase. We've raised about $45,000 since our last meeting, and two significant donations, or I would call them major gifts, came in through two outside donors, one of which is a former board member, which I'm very pleased to see the relationship continue. And for those who know him, it's Ken Brooks. He continues to be very generous, and I was very delighted to have that conversation with him. Another highlight that I want to share is that I've had a really great conversation with an LA-based foundation who I thought would no longer be supporting us as part of the Jerry Brown community of donors. And it was very much the opposite. They're very excited to continue to support OSA and invited me to submit a proposal in the spring. So I didn't count that here as a pledge, but at the very least, we're talking $25,000. Next slide. Just a couple updates from the department. We finalized our case statement, which I had mentioned at the last board meeting. This is a very important communication tool that we use in our communications with major donors. So now that that's been finalized, it's gone through various rounds of edits, and I've had various people looking at it and giving feedback. We are now ready to start using it. So I will have an update on that at the next board meeting. We are delighted to announce that we have hired an institutional giving manager. It's Miss Valerie Sally. She comes to us with over 20 years of experience in the field, and she's just, she's amazing. And she's here on the call somewhere, so I'm sure you can look through and maybe send her a little private welcome. But very excited to have her on the team. She'll be focusing on foundation and corporate relationships through various stages of the donor cycle. And she'll also be helping us research for new donor prospects. So welcome, Valerie. Just reiterating that the annual fund has launched. It launched as of mid-August. The first mail solicitations have gone out. We are seeing, every year, for those of you who have been with OSA for a number of years, we do track family participation as a way to encourage 100% participation in giving. And right now we're at 10%, which is great considering we haven't really launched it, but now without having the letters gone out. Sorry, I'm tired right now. My words aren't really coming to me as quickly as they normally do. So again, we'll expect a significant increase in family contributions after this first mailing. And with that, board solicitations have also been mailed. And I'm not going to call anybody out, but I do want to say thank you to the board member who made a contribution during this meeting. $2,500, thank you very much. That goes a very long way, so thank you. Now let's get the rest of the board members to give to you. No. Okay, next slide. We have a OSA Creates. Everybody should have received an email about this. We sent a special announcement out about this yesterday and the day before. If you haven't, please check this out and please RSVP. As of yesterday, I believe, we've had 175 people RSVP. Keep in mind that does include households, so it's groups of people coming together. But that's excellent, and I'm sure within the past 24 hours, we've had more RSVPs. So please join us for this evening. TT Robson, who is on the advancement team. She manages the annual fund as well as marketing and communications. She's doing an excellent job taking over this event. I in the past have done the annual fund kickoff events, and it's just such a breath of fresh air to have her step in and really own this piece. And she's doing such a wonderful job. And we have Dolores is going to be our MC, super excited about that. And we'll have representation from every department, as well as some faculty members and some other special guests as well. So very excited about this. A lot of work is going into this event, and we hope that you will join us as well. Any questions?
So let's start with public comment. Any public comment? Please put your name in the chat. Okay, board, comments, questions, discussions. So Catherine, this may be one of the benefits of going last.
I have a very ministerial question. I can't remember how I heard about the thing on the 15th and how I RSVP'd to it. Was that via email or was that a hard copy email?
You should have received an email, and for you specifically, you should have received one to your Gmail account and your Oak Arts account.
Well done. I'll find it. Thank you. Okay. I'm in. Will there be any Emmy winners there that evening presenting, performing?
Not that I'm aware of. However, we have contacted one. So okay.
Good. Maybe.
Catherine, thank you so much. Thank you for all of your work. It was a hard job, but we really appreciate it.
Thank you, Elise.
All right, on that note, we are going to adjourn the meeting. Thanks, everyone. Have a great night and a great morning tomorrow.
Bye.
Good night, thank you.
Bye. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.